Good afternoon, and welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today, On the Docket, we're talking about integrative law. The ABA Journal has declared the integrative law movement to be the next huge wave for the legal profession. The movement encompasses some forms of mediation, restorative justice, collaborative practice, and even elements of positive psychology and social neuroscience. Integrative lawyers strive to create a legal system that grants dignity and voice to everyone in the legal system. Today, we're honored to have Professor Marjorie Silver, Jay Kim Wright, and LaTanya Early on the show to help us better understand integrative law and how it's impacting Long Island. Welcome to the show. First, we'll start with Kim Wright. She's a leader in the integrative law movement, the founder and publisher of CuttingEdgeLaw.com. Kim has been a lawyer since 1989. She spent most of her career working to transform the legal profession so that lawyers could be healers and peacemakers. Her book, Lawyers as Peacemakers, Practicing Holistic Problem-Solving Law, immediately became an ABA bestseller. Since the end of 2007, Kim has been a full-time nomad, traveling to share her vision, reaching thousands of lawyers across the world. She's known as a pioneer, leader, and change agent in the area of integrative law, and we're grateful to have her on the show today. Thanks for joining us, Kim.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Marjorie Silver. Marjorie's a professor of law at Toro Law Center on Long Island in New York. She came to law teaching after a decade in the federal government, where as chief regional civil rights attorney for the U.S. Department of Education, she enforced non-discrimination laws. Professor Silver has an international reputation as a teacher, speaker, and writer on emotional competence, psychological mindedness, legal education, lawyering, and professionalism. She's a contributing author and editor of The Effective Assistance of Counsel, Practicing Law as a Healing Profession. Thank you for being on the show with us, Professor Silver.
My pleasure.
Let's start with Kim. Kim, throughout your career, you've actively worked to inspire transformation in the law. We mentioned earlier that this integrative law practice is being phrased a movement. In your opinion, what makes you say that it's a movement?
Well, a movement is defined as a group of people working together to advance shared ideas. And it can be formal or informal, individuals or organizations. And integrative law fits into this framework of movement. There are thousands of lawyers around the world who began first as individuals. They were just doing law differently. And it seems spontaneous at first, just lawyers opening up to new possibilities, focused on doing good. But in the last few years, we've become more organized, and we're working together in groups. Some are formal, some are informal, to bring about positive change in the legal profession. A lot of my work has been about connecting these outliers and catalyzing the movement by convening groups. I also speak to a lot of groups and law schools around the world to raise awareness of the movement and to educate people about the possibilities.
So you said that lawyers are individually starting to do things differently, and collectively you're making this connectivity. But what are the examples of different things that lawyers are doing?
I want to give you three distinct examples. I could actually talk all day because there are dozens of different models and approaches, but I think these three sort of give you some of the variety. So preventive law started with preventing legal risks from becoming legal problems. So, we know what the risks are. Let's handle the risks before it becomes a problem. The Europeans were really attracted to this idea, and they created a related approach, which they call proactive law. So proactive law is particularly relevant to businesses who can't afford the time and resources to constantly be fighting in court, which distracts them from their primary goals. So proactive law is future-focused. Its emphasis is on using their legal knowledge before things go wrong. So it seeks ways to use the law to create value, strengthen relationships, and manage risk. There's a group in, it's called the Nordic School of Proactive Law, which developed from just a handful of people, and now there are almost 3,000 members. So I'll give you a quick example. There's in proactive law, it's conscious contracts. conscious contracts incorporate the values and missions of the party. It actually says in the contract, this is who I am, this is what's important to me, and I want to know who you are and what's important to you. And then that contract is an expression of our purpose and values. Like what we're doing together is advancing our purpose and values, moving us forward to our goals. And the conscious contract has a clause in there which is designed to bring people back to that common goal when they have a conflict. And it's not if they have a conflict, it's usually when. So that's one example. Collaborative law is an integrative approach, which is used mostly in family law. So a Minneapolis attorney, Stu Webb, was practicing for a long time, and he saw the damage that litigation was doing to families and especially to the children, and he just decided he couldn't do that anymore. And he invented a new way to do divorce amicably. So his method involves having the parties and their attorneys sign an agreement that says they won't go to court, and that the collaborative process is going to use all their creative problem-solving skills and neutral experts to come up with a resolution without that animosity and stress of divorce.
And if I could just jump in here, LaTanya Early will be talking at length about that after the break.
Right. And so, Marjorie, while we have you, maybe you could talk to us about how you engage law students who are the future generation of lawyers that are going to be counseling clients here on Long Island. How do you integrate these new concepts into the classroom?
Well, first of all, I do integrate them into all of my classes. And the reason I do this is because most law students come to law school expecting that being a lawyer is about litigating. And they tend to be unaware of the fact that what lawyers really are creative problem solvers for their clients. And as creative problem solvers, they need a whole toolbox full of different tools that will work better for their clients. So I introduced this in my first year course, which is called Civil Dispute Resolution and Procedure, in which students learn not only what students at most law schools learn, which are the basic rules of litigation, of getting into court and what you do once you're in there, but alternatives to that. So I introduce concepts like collaborative law that Kim just referred to. Another is restorative justice, which exists in the criminal field. Another, also an alternative to our punitive litigious approach to criminal justice, traditional criminal justice. And I go into it in professional responsibility to make sure that students are aware that they have these other options, as well as in our seminar for our civil externship program. I think it's critically important that students have some exposure to this, and many of them react quite favorably, unaware before that these kinds of options existed. And we know that not only are most of these options far less expensive and far less stressful for the clients, they also enhance the well-being of lawyers and clients alike.
So just for the sake of our listeners who often go to a lawyer when they've got a problem and all they think about is going to court, why should people who are going to see lawyers, they have to also be aware of these different kinds of options that are out there and be open to them as well? So how do they find out more information about this and why this alternative is better for them than going to court?
Well, I know LaTanya is going to talk more about that after the break, and specifically how clients might find collaborative lawyers. In terms of any kind of central way of doing this, it's somewhat difficult. But I recommend whenever a potential client meets with a lawyer, he or she explores with that lawyer whether the lawyer is open to other options. One of the more traditional alternatives to litigation that's been around a long time is mediation. And mediation can run the gamut from being a rather adversarial process to one that really can be transformative and healing. And if a lawyer is not even willing to consider these kinds of alternatives, and a client is interested in finding less adversarial approaches, I suggest the client talk to another lawyer.
So oftentimes it can be also be less stressful for clients.
People
that are in litigation or might face litigation to know that they can actually resolve this amicably once you figure out what people are really interested in.
I think that clients are generally unaware of how horribly stressful litigation usually is. And I'll say that about divorce litigation as well as about business litigation. It takes such a toll, not just on the time and on the pocketbook in most cases, but on the psyche. I think it was Learned Hand who said, I fear nothing as the only thing I fear next to death is a lawsuit or litigation. And he was a Supreme Court justice, and I've just quoted that really poorly.
Well, thank you, Kim and Marjorie. Please stay with us because coming up, we'll talk to LaTanya Early to address some of the more common questions about the collaborative process. You're listening to On the Docket with Toro Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin from Toro Law Center, and I'm now joined with LaTanya Early, who is not only an attorney, but an operations and business development professional. LaTanya Early graduated from Princeton University in 1989 and earned her law degree from Hofstra in 1992. She's admitted to practice in New York State as well as Connecticut. She established herself as one of the leading young matrimonial attorneys on Long Island in little more than a decade. She even has the distinction of being one of the top 10 divorce attorneys under the age of 45. She currently works at the law offices of Anthony A. Capitola, the largest boutique matrimonial practice on Long Island. Welcome, LaTanya.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So we just heard Marjorie and Kim discuss the integrative law movement that's growing in the legal profession. Collaborative law is considered to be a philosophy within the integrative law movement. Can you tell us more specifically how these two practices relate?
Sure, absolutely. You know, first, I just want to echo something that Marjorie said that I think is really key, and a lot of people don't think about this. When you're going to interview an attorney, you speak to an attorney the same way you would as a doctor. When they're giving you news that you may not want to hear about, you ask what the options are. And that's where your conversation should begin. And when you go to an attorney for a divorce or any other type of a business dispute or any dispute, you always want to talk about what are my options. And the collaborative practice offers an option. It's a modality of getting divorced. And I always tell people that the quickest way to describe it or the easiest way to understand it is that it's an interest-based negotiation. You know, we have the laws that are out there that are one standard by which, if you go to court and litigate, there are some black and white rules. Most rules, you know, they encompass some shades of gray. But the rule of law is one standard by which you can resolve disputes between a divorcing couple. When we talk about an interest-based negotiation for a family that's entering the collaborative process, you're doing this with two attorneys who are trained in collaborative practice, which has a component of mediation skills. And what you're doing is you're exploring with each one of those parties those desires, those concerns, the needs that each one of them have, and trying to find the intersection of both of their needs and to generate solutions of how each one of their needs can be met within that process. What is unique to the collaborative process, as opposed to mediation or litigation, is I describe it as being more holistic. You have family specialists, which are mental health care professionals, that will help the individuals navigate their way through the process, staying focused, and to help everyone, actually, when they get stuck, because we all get stuck at times when we're going through this very emotional time in our lives, and they'll help them move past that. You also have someone called a child specialist, so that if you have children of the marriage and we need to figure out what the parenting schedule is going to be between the parents, the family specialist is often a
forensic psychologist who is used in the court process in a litigated setting, who will actually meet with the children and work with them in a gentle way to hear about their concerns and what some of their desires might be, which is very unique. You don't get that in a litigated process. And the family specialist will bring that to the table for both of the parents to hear as well as the parents' attorneys. And so the children have a very, they have a prevalent voice in the collaborative practice, and that is not had in the litigated setting.
And is that also a difference from the mediation, where it's usually just the parties and maybe their attorneys, but here you'd have these other specialists?
Absolutely. That is a tremendous difference, you know, with both the family specialist and the mental health care professionals working, you know, with the individuals. One of the things, you know, that I have found, and I should say that I have a mediation background. For many years, I was doing mediation before doing collaborative. And one of the things that I was struggled with as a mediator is that you could see the dynamic that was at work between the couple and have a strong sense of what the dynamic was like during the marriage. More often than not, I've observed whatever that dynamic was, especially as it relates to power, whatever it was during the marriage, you would often see it play out in a mediation process. And if that couple was in mediation without counsel, you know, you would see the imbalance of power and one person being much more influential on the other, and the other person having difficulty finding their voice. The collaborative practice model neutralizes that, because while the individuals are in there, and you may still have that same dynamic there, your collaborative attorney is going to help you find your voice. And one of the things that I love about it is that not just your own attorney, but the other attorney will do that as well. So a big distinction in the collaborative practice is that the team is considered everybody. We are one big team, the couple as well as the attorneys and the mental health care professionals that are involved. We will all speak to one another very freely at that table. And it's one of the techniques that's often used is that as the attorney, I will often speak to my client's spouse directly to connect with them and to help draw things out. And it's a very effective tool for helping to open both of the parties' eyes in terms of hearing what the other one has to say. When you see that, oh, well, you know, my spouse's attorney, you know, hears what I'm saying. You know, he or she is listening to me.
Right,
they're going to make sure that my spouse hears what I'm saying.
So one of the things that people going through a divorce are always worried about is the cost.
Yeah.
And now you've mentioned more parties and professionals that are involved in the process. Is this going to raise the cost of getting to a resolution?
No. Let me rephrase that. The best way to think about the cost is that the collaborative process, it will cost you less money than what your litigated divorce will be for you. Meaning, no two litigated divorces cost the same. It really depends on, you know, the emotions of the parties and how many issues are present. That typically, but probably the emotions more than anything else, will really drive the cost of a litigation. You're going to have that same couple are going to have those issues whether it's a very angry divorce or somewhat amicable divorce. But the fact that you have the support team around you keeps everyone focused in addressing each one of those problems in a more constructive way. And therefore, it actually brings the cost down, even though you have so many more professionals around you. So you have to really look at it in terms of what a litigated divorce would look like for that couple.
So the perception is that when people are going through the divorce process, they're either, at least one party is very emotionally charged and very angry at the other, or both people are just ready to say, fine, we're just ready to get on and go our own ways. And those people tend to go towards the mediation, and the anger and emotion tends to go towards the litigation. Where does the collaborative process fit in between the two?
You know, I happen to think a couple that's very friendly with one another can work successfully in mediation, come up with a good agreement, and probably not need to involve a whole team of professionals around them. For everyone else, where it's not very amicable, you can collaborate. It can be the angriest couple where both are very emotionally driven as a result of what's happened between the couple. The only thing that's needed is both parties' commitment not to want to give all their money to their lawyers. And if you have that commitment of not wanting to give all of your money and your children's college education to your lawyers, you can collaborate. It'll take more time. There will be a lot more meetings. But it will be a lot less costly than if you start in court, because that same angry couple, more often than not, they're going to start in court with motion practice. And each motion can cost you probably as little as $3,500 and as much as $7,000, depending upon what the issues are. You're not going to have that in collaborative.
Right. And, of course, when you go to litigation, your lawyers are speaking for you and the judge is making the decision. And with a collaborative process, each of the impacted parties is having a greater say in how things go. So,
absolutely.
So how would somebody find a lawyer who is skilled in collaborative law? Do lawyers advertise this, or what questions do you ask?
Well, what you can do is, if you do a Google search, there are a whole host of organizations that collaborative practitioners in your local area belong to. So that is one source. You can go through to your bar association, but I would invite anyone who sits down and speaks to, who gets a recommendation for an attorney, to ask them about the different modes of practice that they practice in. I'm also a believer in that you should select an attorney the same way you would select, you know, a surgeon, for example. If you were having a very serious health issue, you would ask friends, family, people that you know and respect, other professionals that you know, for a recommendation. And if the collaborative practice is what you're looking for, chances are you're going to know people who know collaborative practitioners who can give you a name.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you, LaTanya, Marjorie, and Kim. It was great to have all of you join us today and to explain to our listeners different methods of legal practice. It doesn't just have to all be about litigation. And I want to thank our listeners out there for joining us again this week. On the Docket airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 109.3. So until next Sunday, have a great week. This is Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center in Central Islip.